Hello and welcome to the Known and Ever podcast. I'm Jamie Smith. Joining me this week are Natalie and Kevin, and hopefully James will join us at some point. He's on his way. We don't know where he's going from, but hopefully he will get there at some point. Another away defeat for Burnley, so we're just going to rip out previous podcasts, copy and paste them in. No one will be able to tell the difference. We'll just edit it up. Natalie, deja vu with Burnley losing by one goal at Liverpool this time. Reasonable performance, but nothing to show for it.
Again. How many times have we said this season?
We should get some sort of award for trying to come up with new ways to talk about Burnley losing away.
It's getting really challenging. It really is getting challenging to try and stay constructive and try and take some positives from a game. But to be fair, I mean, am I massaging stereotypes by saying this? But again, it's a Liverpool away, and it wasn't a game that we were expected to get anything from. It was a free game. It was a shot at just getting some bonus points. And, winning or getting a draw away at the likes of Anfield do not dictate where you finish at the end of the season. Saying that, once again, I felt like we were quite guilty of being wasteful of an opportunity. We saw it away at City this year as well. We found an off-par City who were reduced to 10 men, and we just were not positive enough, and we didn't take advantage of the scenario put in front of us. And I felt again on Sunday we were, in the first half, we very much did. We knew going into this game that Liverpool do not like playing sides like us. They can't handle the way we play football, and they don't have any plan B to counteract our football. And we knew that, and it went exactly how we thought it was going to do in the first half. Our tactics worked to dream. We completely nullified their play, and we restricted them to one chance in injury time of the first half. So we were faced with a Liverpool side that's lacking in a little bit of confidence against the bottom sides in the division, struggling for a little bit of consistency, and struggling to have any impact in respect of a game plan that we executed really, really well. And once again, as soon as we conceded the equalising goal, we didn't take advantage of that, and we just let them back into the game. So that's probably the most frustrating thing for me, as opposed to the level of the performance itself. It's this slight naivety again in this division. As much as we're learning and as much as we've improved, there's still that inability to react to positively to changes in dynamics as they happen in a game, and not just stick rigidly to a predetermined game plan.
Yeah, I think on the face of it, Kev, going to Liverpool losing 2-1, we restricted them to very few chances. I don't think Heaton made a save until the last minute from Sadio Mane. But going forward, Burnley just don't really seem ambitious enough. They don't offer much away from home.
No. Regular listeners to the podcast will understand my dismay when the team sheet was announced and Scott Arfield was in the team ahead of Robbie Brady. And while I understand why Dyche might have wanted to put him there, for me, it's just the complete wrong approach, and we've tried to sit back and play for the draw and play for just shutting the opposition out as much as possible so many times away from home all season, and it hasn't worked. I think you look at the way we started the game against Liverpool at Turf Moor, and we scored both of our goals through really, really pressing them and really taking the game forward to them in the early stages of the game and pushing them forward and really being crap proactive with the way we attacked them. And you look at the team and the options, particularly looking at Robbie Brady, who was on the bench. Dropping Brady for Arfield, it just sent all the wrong signals. But we were doing that again. There was no real ambition to go out there and take the game to Liverpool in terms of team selection, and it just looked too defensive. Having said that, I think, like Natalie said, we started the game really well, and I was surprised actually, because Liverpool surely would have been much more aware than maybe some other teams having been beaten by us so early in the season. So it was a surprise to see us. I think we were completely on top pretty much for the first half hour. I think after that first half hour, Liverpool finished the first half very well. The last 15 minutes or so, it looked like a Burnley away game. and so did much of the second half until probably the last 15 minutes again, actually. And you just, I mean, there's so many ifs. You wonder if we'd had a bit more confidence away from home, if we'd won a couple of games, if that goes differently. You wonder if we were able to have a bit more concentration and not concede. If we'd held out 15 more seconds in the first half, you wonder if, you know, because the Anfield crowd was starting to get on top of the team. And you can imagine, you know, they're going 1-0 high, 1-0 behind to Burnley. They get booed off, they got booed back on, the crowd's restless. Instead, they go in at half time, kind of buoyed by an equalising goal right on the stroke. So I think that changes things massively. You wonder if Matt Lawton hits that ball first time in the dying minutes. If he strikes that shot first time, that almost certainly goes in. So there's so many ifs there. And I think if any of those ifs comes off, we're here talking about a very good performance and a very good point at Anfield, at least a point anyway. So it's a difficult one because, yeah, we've got beat again. There were some very disappointing aspects to the game, but I also think there were some very encouraging aspects for the game, particularly the way we started the game, the way we ended the game. It's just a shame about what happened in the middle, and also some of the decisions made in certain areas by a couple of players on the pitch, but also the men on the side as well.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll come on to Sean Dyche's decisions. Kev's already talked about Arfield over Brady. The other change made was Barnes in for Volks. After serving his suspension, Natalie, I was a bit surprised, maybe disappointed as well with this one, after I felt Volks played quite well last weekend, involved in two goals, as I put it on Twitter, even though one was winning a penalty for handballing it. I'm counting it as an assist. I'm counting it. It's an assist. But in fairness to Barnes, he scored a goal, so you can't really complain too much. But he did also give away a lot of fouls. It seemed like our attacking momentum just seemed to halt a little bit because the decisions were going against him rather than for him on Sunday.
Yeah, I think it was a real mixed bag for Barnes. I shared your disappointment when Sam wasn't in the starting lineup, because I just think, generally speaking, and this is quite high level analysis, but as a general principle, I feel that Volks and Gray are a better partnership, both in terms of technical ability and goals, than Gray and Barnes are. But Barnes had an absolutely cracking first half, and he scored a brilliant goal not long after. I think I did two opposition podcasts in the build-up to the Liverpool game, and on both of those podcasts, I basically said that I was hoping that Volks would start, because as much as Barnes offers to the game and as much as he makes a nuisance of himself, I can never really ever see him scoring a goal. And it just blatantly, he obviously listened to those podcasts and went, screw you, Bromley. I am going to show you that I can score goals, and scored an absolutely brilliant goal. So that's fine.
Over-exaggerating your profile.
No, I'm not. I'm not clearly, sure he's obviously,
a listener. If you are a listener, please feel free to email. Drop us a line at podcast @nonenever.net.
I know you're listening. No, but I think it's like you say, I think Ashley's all about the nuisance factor, and is about the hustle, and is about the opportunities that he creates for the team and the free kicks that he wins. And he also breaks up their momentum very well as well. And when that works for him, he can be a very, very effective player in that squad. Unfortunately, when it doesn't go his way, he can actually be more of a hindrance than he can be a help. And Sunday was one of those. I thought in the build-up to the goal, I thought he was superb. But once he scored and we sort of settled into the half, I just thought he'd started to be more of a hindrance, like I said, than a help. And like you say, he was giving away the fouls. And it was quite clear early on that the referee was having none of his physical aspects of the game and was blowing up against him every single time. So I think at that point, I would have brought Volks on a hell of a lot earlier, because I think, again, going back to this reactive point of Dyche's, it was quite obvious to all of us that the point where Barnes stopped being effective became pretty obvious to all of us, and Dyche seemed to wait another 60 minutes or so before he brought Volks on.
Yeah, on the Barnes-Volks thing, I felt quite I made a point before the match of saying that I was disappointed that Barnes was playing and not Vaux, and so we've received quite a few tweets from people saying, oh, he's proved you wrong.
Yeah, but it was reverse psychology, right?
well, of course, yeah. I mean, but, you know, obviously it's great that he scored a great goal. Obviously that's fantastic, but I still don't think, one goal changes my opinion that Vaux offers more to the game than Ashley Barnes does. I've never said that Barnes is a terrible player. I don't think, if truth be told, I don't think either of them are good enough for the team that we need to be. I don't think there's a lot between, but I just think Vaux just about edges it in his ability to contribute to goal and game-changing opportunities. But that said, it was a fantastic goal. I'm not sure it's a goal that Vaux scores himself. So it's... What a fantastic pass from Bowling from Loughton as well, by the way. I talked earlier about Matt Loughton's miss at the end, but that miss kind of was perhaps overshadows a little bit what a fantastic cross it was and a fantastic ball it was for the goal in the first place.
Yeah, it's fair to give him credit for that, actually, because we do get quite frustrated with the quality of his final ball sometimes, and it was peach of a pass. I think Barnes' first goal in open play since December, so... although he brings different things to the team than goals, it's quite clear that he doesn't quite offer enough in terms of a goal threat. I think it was his 10th Premier League goal for us now. He's just one behind Danny Ings. James has joined us, I think. James, hello.
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 Hey.
Better late than never.
Nice of you to join us, baby.
Now, hopefully you won't cover all the same points that we've just gone over, but what did you make of Burnley's performance at Anfield on Sunday?
I've obviously no idea what any of you said, so I thought it wasn't awful, but at the same time, you know, we really seem to be lacking something in front of goal. Obviously, Gray, I thought, looked really bright, particularly early on. But he's never got any service in areas where he's going to score goals. And I think that's been a problem for us sort of all season. And, you know, was it last game or a few games ago? We gave him the sort of balls we've all been saying that's what Gray needs. And he scored. This game we didn't. And he didn't. So, I think there's a clear pattern emerging there. But for me, like the biggest takeaway was I thought our subs in the second half were bizarre, really. You know, we eventually brought Brady on, obviously a big money signing. And we played him on the wrong side, which is curious at best. Particularly when you're talking about someone who hasn't been very effective with his crosses so far. I think he started off obviously the same way Hendrick has. And we're all hoping we're going to see him kickstart at some point, but I don't think playing him out of position is the way to make that happen. And taking Gray off, which I've never understood when we're chasing a game, you know, take off your biggest goal-scoring threat. You know, although Barnes did score, I feel after he scored, did he look like he was threatening to score again? Probably not. Whereas Gray, if you get the ball to him in the right position, he's always a threat to score. So I thought it was curious to take him off. And also to take Boyd off ahead of Arfield, because I thought Arfield was pretty poor, continuing a pattern of a particularly under par season for him. So I don't know, it was a strange game. I thought Liverpool weren't very good and really it should have been there for the taking, but ultimately again our end product let us down. Obviously Matt Lawton put in a fantastic ball for the goal, but second half particularly his crossing left a little bit to be desired, and obviously he missed a chance which I think was actually tougher than it looked at the time. I don't think he could hit straight away because the defender was there, but obviously, it could have rescued the point for us if he could have put it away.
I guess the argument behind taking Gray off is that we were just going to be pumping loads of balls up, and I'm guessing Dyche maybe perhaps wanted two bigger targets up there. But on the flip side of that,
you still need someone to pick up the scraps, though. I mean, exactly, there's no point winning the ball in the air if there's not going to be anyone there to get it on the ground.
I'm thinking specifically, again, going back to this a couple of times, but again, to that Loughton chance at the end, if that falls to someone like Gray instead of Loughton, that is probably a goal. I've not seen it too much many times, James, so I'm not sure. I'm going to trust that you're not lying when you say that it was more difficult than it looks. But even having said that, surely if that lands to Gray, that's a goal. So, yeah, you know, I can appreciate, you know, we might want to get more bigger men up there, but if you've not got those players, like Gray's the sort of player who is going to just get a scrap like that, and he's going to be able to fire that in. He's got that more kind of finesse and a bit more skill and a bit more technique, which we really lack, particularly with players like Goodmanson and Defoe out of the side. So it's a strange one for me. But I think if you're going to be doing like that, Gray's exactly the type of player you need, because we've seen so often he does so well on the Vokes flick on. So that's it was a very strange one for me. I can only assume that if it's not that, he was really tired or something. I don't know. But yeah, it was disappointing. I just think if we kept him on, he might not have come to something, probably wouldn't have come to something, but there's always that potential that he's going to be able to get out on the end of something. And he's more likely to get something in than anyone else's, I think.
Yeah, with Gray, whenever he comes off, I just assume it's energy levels. And he does tire in games because he puts so much in. Although I'm sure there's a lot of fans out there wish he would do a bit more running around, because sometimes it doesn't look like he's giving 100%. Natalie, on the decisions we've talked about already, Brady coming on and playing on the right side, weird one for a lot of people. For me as well, my main bugbear is that it takes so long. As soon as we go behind, make the attacking changes. I don't understand why it takes 10 minutes, 10, 15 minutes to do that. You're going to put Brady on for one of the wingers. Do it straight away. There's no need to wait. And you're going to put Volks on, so why not give him 20 minutes, not 10 minutes?
Yeah. He should be thinking ahead of himself. And it doesn't... I mean, this might be ridiculous. You know, he might...
It takes 2 minutes. Play Gus to warm-up. Yeah, let's go. Send him to warm-up. Get him on straight away.
Yeah. Dyche should be thinking ahead of what's going to happen. And then he sits there and says, well, what should I do? And then he makes a decision. And it's the wrong thing to do. I mean... the Brady one's particularly weird on the basis that he'd obviously dropped him. He wasn't injured. He dropped him in favour of Arfield today and put Arfield on the left because he felt that Arfield offered something, perhaps a better shape to the team, or he offered a more consistent approach than Brady was going to do, which in itself is laughable, but that's beside the point. So if he was going to then accept that he needed Brady on the pitch to change the game and make an impact... Arfield can play on the right. Like, why put a player who's struggling in his most natural position, so he gets dropped, then gets to come on to make an impact in a game out of position? It's just bizarre beyond words. I do not understand Dyche sometimes. I really don't.
Yeah,
that point about form is my biggest thing about this. It's, I think if Brady's in the form of his life, is playing full of confidence, is just fantastic, then you know there's perhaps an argument for playing him on the right and allowing him to come in and have those shots and just have a bit more freedom. But he's not, and he's obviously struggling to find any real rhythm. He's struggling to adapt back to the Premier League, so surely you don't want to be putting more pressure on him. Like you say, you need to be playing him where he's comfortable and give him those opportunities to get back to form.
Yeah, maybe. I think one counter argument, and I'm not saying I believe this, but maybe it's just to give him something different, to maybe try and jar him into a bit of form. Like, the theory behind playing wingers on the wrong side is that they can cut inside and shoot and cross. So technically, I suppose, if you're going to play Brady on the right, he can cut inside, use that left foot. Fair enough. But the problem for me with that is that Brady came on, Barnes and Gray were still on the pitch. Barnes and Gray don't seem to score a lot of headers, so he wasn't going to cut in and put crosses in. So the decision making didn't seem to really match up. It was a bit weird for me, but I also think we've just got to be more patient with Brady. It is early days. We've seen with Hendrick that it can take time when players adapt to the higher level, and it just beggars belief for me that we spent, what, £12-13 million on a winger, and then a month later we've decided that Scott Arfield's a better option. It just seems really, really strange to me, and I still haven't quite got my head around it, even a day later. I don't understand what Dyche was thinking, really. Moving on from substitutions, and decisions then. James, a few people saying it was our best away performance of the season. Burnley put a lot of graft into the performance, but the same story as a lot of the away games this season. Not enough craft in the final third, and it said a lot that we created that one chance at the end for Matt Lawson. That was it, really.
Yeah, it was really slim pickings. You know, you look at the way we try to play, and a few times we put balls down the channels for Gray. And that's not really the way you want to use him, because you want to get the ball to Gray in places where he's got the opportunity to shoot. But I actually thought he did a good job with the limited service he got. When the balls went down the channels, he tried to cut them back across the box, and there was a chance early on before the goal, actually, where really I think Barnes should have been trying a little bit harder to get on the end of it. But we just seem to be lacking that bit of creativity, which I think is exactly the reason we signed Brady for, because Boyd and Arfield, neither of them are going to give you much creativity going forward. I mean, you know, when they get the ball, they tend to run straight lines. In Boyd's case, tends to run a straight line with the ball 20 foot behind him. But we seem to be just lacking any sort of creativity. I think we're sort of running out of ways to describe why we struggle to score, and it's just clearly that we need to get the ball to our danger men in dangerous positions.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds easy, doesn't it? Obviously, football's a lot more complicated than that. And we said last week, didn't we, that we miss Stephen Defoe and we miss Gudmundsson as well, but all teams have to do without players sometimes, and to spend all that money on a player who was theoretically going to be a big upgrade on your wingers and then bench him doesn't quite make any sense to me. Maybe he's carrying some sort of injury, maybe Dyche should take him out of the firing line for a game. Presumably he had some logic to the decision. I just don't get it, and I really hope that he is back in for next weekend at Sunderland, which we'll talk about later in the podcast. Natalie, we haven't touched on goalkeeping yet. Tom Heaton came back for Paul Robinson. We were quite critical of Robinson last weekend, but Heaton beaten from quite a long way out from Emery Chan. I think he said in interviews afterwards that he was unsighted, but should he have maybe done a little bit better with it? I think both goals, there's defenders in his way.
Yeah, I keep changing my mind every time I see a replay of that second goal. I think sometimes I look at it from a certain angle and think, he's got to do better there. Then I see it at another angle and think, it's kind of impossible. And I think sometimes, I wonder whether or not we just have quite high expectations of Tom Heaton, because he does make some absolutely incredible saves from some world-class strikers, so you almost expect him to pull it out of the bag every single time there's a great shot. At the end of the day, it was a superb strike, and he was so close to it. He got down very, very quickly, even though he was unsighted, and his palm was so close to that ball. This is massively sitting on the fence, but I honestly can't come down on one side or the other as to whether or not I think he can do better. I think there's arguments for both. Tom Heaton, being Tom Heaton, will be self-critical, I would expect, and I think he will look at it and see how he can improve. And I like that quality about him, because you want somebody to not be down on themselves, but you want somebody to find any possible reason for a goal and to do anything they can to make it a little bit better for the next time he faces a strike of that quality. But to say that he should have done better is probably being a little bit harsh.
I'm not going to sit on the fence. I think that I'm not putting any blame at all on Tom Heaton for that. I thought it was a fantastic strike. He was slightly unsighted, and I think regardless of goalkeeper, what goalkeeper's in the net, I think 8 or 9 times out of 10, whoever's in goal, that ends up in the back of the net. I think it was a fantastic strike. And I think, you know, the way we set up, our tactic essentially is to invite teams to shoot from distance and not make the way actually into the box. So you can probably say we've done quite well actually to not concede too many goals of that ilk this season. That's what we invite teams to do. We invite teams to shoot from distance. If it comes off now and again, I don't think we can complain too much, particularly when it's a strike of such strength as that. There was so much power behind it. Tom Heaton had so little time to react. I think he did quite well actually just to get down to it and almost keep it out.
Yeah, it was similar to the game at Turf, wasn't it? And the one that we won against Liverpool, in that a lot of their shots were speculative and just hopeful rather than anything else, and sometimes they're just going to go in. We're recording on Monday night after the FA Cup game between Chelsea and Man United, and there's people saying De Gea should have done better with Kante's goal, which was a similar hit to Chan, a bit closer, bounced right in front of the goalkeeper. He's got absolutely no chance. I think people these days are just desperate to pick mistakes for goals. Sometimes you just can't really do anything about it. I don't think there's much else to say about the game. I'm certainly bored of talking about yet another Burnley away defeat, so well done if you managed to get this far into the podcast. I'm as sick of it as you are. So let's go to Natalie for Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week. Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week, Tweet of the Week.
Indeed. This week, Tweet of the Week is back with its rightful owner. James Bird, get your thieving mitts off my feature. I'm having it back. So this week, Tweet of the Week goes to Graham Cowking, who's at GJC Lanx. I can't read. I'm sorry, listeners. And he quite positively states that chances are few at this level. Composure in front of goal is essential, but it's encouraging to see an actual fight. And I liked that summary from Graham. I thought it was realistic in respect of the opposition we were facing, but also quite rightly encouraging that certainly for the first half at least, we did show some real fight and took the game to Liverpool and tried to get something out of it. So well done, Graham. This one, this week's Tweet of the Week.
Yeah, one of our Kickstarter backers as well, I think, Graham. So thanks a lot to Graham again for that.
You can fix.
Check
out. It's not a fix.
Check out the list of all our Kickstarter backers is on our brand new shiny website, which, if you haven't seen it already, is well worth a look. You can even respond to podcasts and say how good they are. Hint, hint, on the new website. So please do give it a look. That's at nonanever.net. As it has always been. Looking ahead to next week then, Burnley are away again. Oh my God, when will this run end? Sunderland away, the worst team in the league, James. If we're going to win away, surely it's going to be this one. Surely.
You've got to think, hope, pray it is. I mean, we've said this so many times this season now that, you know, such and such game is going to be the one where we eventually win away. That I'm a bit reluctant to say it. I'm turning to Brommers here, aren't I? Sort of like some sort of superstition going on. But I am wary of saying that this is the one, because I think we've had this is the one sort of five or six times, and it's
we've
not
been in the
yet.
Lead in the last two. So by some judgments, we are getting nearer. Been in a position to win games at least.
Yeah, I mean, it's one we really should win. You know, you look at the position there and you look at where we are. I think if we can win, it'd be nice, because I think it just put us in a good position to end the season really strongly and sort of take a lot of confidence into next season. I don't think we're at any risk of obviously getting dragged into a relegation battle. You know, what the games we've got left at home that are winnable should be enough. But it's more now just for the, you know, to try and avoid having a winless away record, I guess, for the season. It'd just be really nice to get a win away from home and, you know, carry that sort of confidence into the rest of the season and just see how strong we can finish.
Yeah, I mean, we've played Sunderland a few times already this season, and I don't think we've conceded, have we, in three games. Drew up at their place in the cup, then beat them in the replay, beat them comfortably in the league. As well, Andre Graham Shaw's looking forward to this game. He's got a very good record against Sunderland this season. On the flip side, though, Kev, Sunderland battling for points. They'll see Burnley, the worst team in the league, away from home coming up. They'll be desperate to win this one. So we can't take anything for granted, especially considering how difficult we've been finding it away from home.
Absolutely, yeah. And you look at our away results, particularly in the last... since we had a slight upturn, and throughout... we seem to have done better against in some of the games when we've not been expected to do as well. Obviously, it was disappointing that we failed to capitalise on the advantage. But at City, we it was a decent performance. We got our only point for much of the season at Old Trafford. We had a very good performance in some parts against Liverpool. On the flip side, we've just been diabolic against some of the worst teams. So you wonder if that plays a part. Obviously, we were going to go into this game with more pressure on us than we would have done against Liverpool. Jamie, you said if we don't win this game, it's just which is a game we've got to win. However much Sean Dyche will be telling them otherwise, that's also probably that'll be in the back of a player's minds, thinking this is probably the best opportunity we'll have to win away from home all season. They'll be going into this match knowing that. So all these different attributes, I think, all these different elements add a bit more complexity and a bit more difficulty to the match from our part. Hopefully that pressure and that away form might have been alleviated a little bit by the, like I say, we've got a very good record against Sunderland this season. So hopefully that can give us that bit more of belief, bit more confidence, and hopefully we can get at least a point. I've given up hoping for a win. I'm just going on hoping for a point now.
We're getting that desperate. We thought, hope we can get a point at someone. Oh, blimey. We have been getting closer though, Natalie. We got a draw at Hull. We probably should have won at Swansea if we hadn't defended so appallingly. And Sunderland are the worst team in the league, so we've got to be targeting a win. I'd be really disappointed if we go up there set up for a draw.
Yeah, I will as well. I'd be so frustrated if he does that, just because Sunderland are the worst side in the division at the moment. They are rooted to the bottom. They don't look like they can buy a win from anywhere. And they look to the entire world that they're just preparing for life in the Championship. And if we go up there and play anywhere near how well we've played against those we did against the likes of City, Spurs, Liverpool, United, then we will win. But if we go up there and play like we tried to play against West Ham or, some of the weaker sides, or in the earliest parts of the season against like Leicester and Bournemouth when we got really turned over, then we're going to gift Sunderland a really important 3 points. And whilst it won't allow them to get that much closer to us, because they are obviously, I think they're only on 19 points, aren't they? All it takes is for Sunderland to beat us and some of the other teams down at the bottom to pick up some, really important wins. And we can suddenly see this 7 point gap potentially reduced down to 4. And whilst I'm still relatively confident that we've done enough to stay up this season, that suddenly becomes a lot more uncomfortable than it should be. And if we are, Dash keeps telling us that we're not looking over our shoulders, we're not concerned about relegation, we're looking up the table to see how high up we can finish. So if he goes away to Sunderland and sets up for a 0-0 draw and plays very negative, very nervous football, then I just don't buy the lip talk that he's giving for the rest of the season about how positive they're playing and how they want to finish as high as they can, because his decisions and his actions won't be backing up what he's talking about. So I think I read a really interesting article. I've circulated it on Twitter today, and I think quite a few people on the Twitter Clarets hashtag have posted this, so do have a look on there. But the Mirror wrote an article yesterday about basically saying that to them, Burnley's away form this season is utterly bizarre, and you really should not pay any attention to the hard facts on paper, because that would suggest that Burnley have been incredibly poor away from home, really bad travel sickness, and just unable to string two passes together. And that article's full of praise for Burnley in saying that we've really gone ahead in each game and tried to compete and been positive and really gone for some positive results. Now, I'm not entirely sure I agree with everything in the article, but it is quite nice actually to see one of the national newspapers just writing they're putting quite a positive spin on there, but sticking up for the little guys, I guess, in the division. You don't get that much in the Premier League, and actually saying this away form that they're on isn't a true reflection of what's actually on paper and that they're doing all right. So yeah, that's worth a read if you want to have a look at that. But otherwise, I think you're right. I think I'll be absolutely amazed if we don't win away on Saturday. I think that this away game has got to come on Saturday. If it doesn't, we aren't going to win for the rest of the season, but I'm pretty confident we're going to do it.
Good stuff. We'll come on to predictions shortly, but a couple of other things to wrap up before the end of the podcast. Should have probably done this with the Liverpool stuff earlier, but I was so desperate to not talk about Burnley losing. Pete sends us a couple of stats, and Natalie's checked these, I think, while we were waiting at the start of the podcast. Pete says there's 28 league games plus the Lincoln Cup match. We've conceded 11 goals in added time at the end of the first half or after the 89th minute. I think we counted and got 10, so 10 or 11 goals. It's obviously a big proportion of the goals that we're conceding, James. I remember when Eddie Howe was manager, he used to get absolutely battered for us conceding goals at the end of the half. But it's been a similar story this season. Is it concentration? Is it fitness? Is it a bit of bad luck? The goal against Liverpool just seems to be really unlucky, though. It just bounces up and takes a deflection, then hits Ben Mee in the knackers and falls perfect for their players. But there has to be... It's obviously a trend, so it's the common factor is us. What are we doing wrong that this keeps happening?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, because I think we just sort of sit back and invite pressure late in the half. And it's not something we do during the rest of the game. So it's curious, and I wonder why the players have that sort of mentality. But also, I don't know if anyone else has mentioned this yet about Liverpool's first goal, but am I the only person who heard a whistle as the ball landed in the box?
I did check that actually after you tweeted it, Birdie, and it isn't. It's a whistle from the crowd. It's nothing. There's no conspiracy there.
Well, I'm very glad I didn't tweet it then.
Yeah, I saw it on the thread. I did check it for you because I was going to stop you from tweeting it.
It was definitely in the allocated time, so there's no
wishful
reason
thinking.
That's not what I was thinking. I wasn't thinking the end of the half. I was thinking
maybe the players.
You know, when
stopped.
You see it live, it looks like it could bounce off. Could have bounced off anything. But I think it's hard to blame Ben Mee for that one. He was pretty unlucky. But just the fact that we sat back in a way that allowed them to get the ball into the box in the first place. And I think that's been a common theme with quite a lot of these goals as well. You know, they are sort of balls pumped into the box and then a scrappy goal. I'm trying to think if there's been one where it's been like a fantastic solo piece of skill or something.
Yeah.
But
we were going through it earlier, and the Snodgrass free kick for Hull is probably the only one where it's like, yeah, fair enough. But even then, it's a pretty soft, needless free kick to give away.
Yeah, so I don't know what it is. We just seem to sit back and try and keep what we've got coming into the end of halves, and you know, it's really not worked for us. We need to just continue playing the same way we played the rest of the game.
Yeah, you'd think we'd learn from it, though. It's happened so many times. You'd think it'd get towards the last couple of minutes and we'd be like, get the ball up the other end. Instead of just waiting for them to score.
I thought we'd turned a corner actually with this, and I think one of the games we played at home, and forgive me, I can't remember which one it was, but we were, I think it might be Leicester actually, we were really, really clinical, and we were really obviously trying to see out the game in the dying half of the first half and at the end as well. And it was when we talked on the podcast about Ashley Barnes just like getting fouls and making sure he went down just to break up play and just to put a little bit of calm onto the game and stop them getting momentum. It's just, I think for the first time this week though, I've seen one of the interviews after the game where somebody's directly criticised their lack of concentration in the dying seconds, and I think it was Heaton who said, you know, we played such a good half and we're so disappointed that we just switched off for a second and we've got to learn to stop doing that. And it's the first time that any player or manager's come out and acknowledged that they've got a concentration problem in the dying seconds of a half.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same as everything else. It's like, it's all very well like knowing it's a problem, but stop doing it. it's exasperating. And the last thing that I wanted to bring up, Kev, international break after this game, so there's not going to be a podcast next week. I don't think England squad announcement. There's some speculation that Andre Gray might be a surprise pick. A lot of England forwards are injured, out of form. At the moment, do you expect just two Burnley boys in the squad, Heaton and Keane, I think we assume are going to be in there? Gray would be a bit of a wild card, wouldn't he, even though there's not many alternatives.
There are not, and I think if Gray got in, it probably would be because there's not a lot of alternatives. I think he's done a decent job this season, but there's also been quite a lot about his game that hasn't been as impressive, and obviously he needs to.
He's not really hammering on the door of the selection, is he? I mean,
no.
The goals at Swansea last week were his first goals in 6 or 7, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, I've talked a little bit about, I think some of that is restrictions on because of the team and the system.
Yeah, it's partly a lack of service, of course, yeah.
But yeah, it's not done anything we'd say Andre Gray needs to be in the England squad. That said, yeah, there's not many options around him. I'd be surprised if he's in purely because I think Gareth Southgate's just quite a cautious, safe manager. I don't think he's one to take that a big risk. I think he'd much rather take a safer player, a safer bet, somebody who's been there and done it before, than take a risk on somebody new if they're not really banging on the door. So for me, it probably will be the two. But it'd be a surprise if Andrew Gray's in there, but you could certainly see some logic behind why he might be.
Yeah, I think you can make a case for it. I think before the weekend, I'm not sure if the stat changed with the games. I don't think so. There's only three English strikers scored more in the league this season, I think. One of them's Jermaine Defoe, who's in international exile, really. Hasn't been picked for a long time. And you look at the strikers who've been in the squads in the last couple of years. Rooney's obviously on his way out and injured at the moment. Sturridge, constantly injured, not getting in the Liverpool team. Jamie Vardy's having a pretty awful season at Leicester. And Danny Welbeck's only just back to fitness, so it'll be interesting to see where he goes, because I think Harry Kane's going to be out as well. So it would be a big shock, James, but I am looking forward to seeing who Southgate picks instead, because it might be a case of going back to the likes of Crouch and Carroll.
Yeah, I can't really see Crouch, but I know obviously Defoe's been mentioned. He's been fantastic for Sunderland, you know, the last couple of seasons, but I think you've got to look to the future a little bit, haven't you? And even if he is scoring goals now, it doesn't achieve anything for your next major tournament. So, I don't know, it's tough. Obviously, you can say Gray's maybe not scored enough goals to justify the call-up. But again, it comes back to, has he had the service to score them? And I'd say probably not. But maybe what what people have seen of him shows that he could score more for England.
It was interesting this week, actually. Natalie did a big interview with Sky, where he was talking about dreaming of playing for England. And obviously the timing just before the international break stirred all this up. But with his contract situation as well, like Michael Keane, he's only got a year left at the end of this season. So I think Gray may be a bit in the balance at the minute, whether we're going to be able to persuade him to stay or whether he thinks he has to move on and try and push on.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a nice problem to have, isn't it? We've not really ever had a
squad
before.
When your players are getting speculated about being in England squads and talk
it's
of teams
fantastic.
Making
yeah.
bids, it obviously means they're doing something right.
Yeah, of course, and especially with the kind of money that's been battered around for Michael Keane. I think the latest quote was that Everton were looking at preparing a £28 million bid for him, which is insane. And that's obviously
it's
going
insane,
to be a huge
but it's still
challenge.
Like half of what he's worth.
Yeah, of course. But it is still, like, we've not had players of that calibre before. You know, we've had strikers who we've been excited about being able to sell for maybe £6 million. You know, £28 million is a huge amount. And if Andre Gray's career takes off, then, you know, he can expect to be going for big money. I think for me, I think maybe Andre Gray's lifestyle choices might find us struggling a little bit. I mean, his life seems to very much heavily revolve around the South at the moment. His personal circumstances dictate that he spends a lot of time in London. If a club like Spurs, who I believe are interested in looking at him, if a London club come in for him and pay him a lot of money and he's got the opportunity for really push on for the England squad, I think we've got absolutely zero chance of keeping hold of him. But that's reality of life at Burnley. It is getting better. I think the fact that we've managed to keep hold of Tom Heaton as long as we have is a credit to what we're building at Burnley, and the fact that players seem to really like it here. Joey Barton came here and came back, and he doesn't suffer fools lightly, and he comes with the ego and the circus that surrounds him, and we've managed to keep hold of players like that. And actually, to be honest, last season as well, Keane could have gone last season. You know, I think Leicester and Everton last season was showing interest in him, and he came out straight away and said, you know, no, I'm not. I still feel like I've got something to learn, and I'm staying where I am for the time being. So it's frustrating. It's always frustrating when you lose your best players, but you can't hold your players back. And to see Michael Keane and Heaton, or even Andre, to go away and become top players in a top Premier League side and play for the country, we should be proud about that rather than being upset about the loss to our side, because financially we're in a really great place. We've got a manager and some scouts who are attracting good players. We've got a good team ethos behind us, and we wish them players well, because we will get people in who'll replace them.
Yeah, absolutely. The club has survived losing top players before. I'm sure they will do. Again, lastly on this, James, outside chances of a call-up. What about Michael Catley and Marvin Sodell?
Oh, thanks for the
you
link.
You thought I wasn't going to give you a link.
Here comes Catley corner.
Oh, God.
He was going to do it anyway. You might as well tee him up.
bad week for Catley corner. He's back from injury, but unfortunately couldn't make him to the pitch. I think other injuries sort of hampered his opportunity to get a half an hour run out at the end of the game.
You can't even get a game for Burton now. Oh, dear.
Well, he was injured, wasn't he? And,
might as well just retire.
They had two injuries, in the first half, so if the manager was intending to ease him back into action, then obviously that was denied. And Marvin's mention, terrible news for Marvin, injured on the 19th minute.
Oh, dear.
Not a lot of luck for our former glory boys with injuries.
Is this staying as a thing?
Bring back Marv when we sell grey in the summer.
Seriously, is this a thing? Are we doing this now?
As long as Kites and Marvin are leading Burton to safety at the expense of Blackburn, this is a thing.
Okay, I'll give you that one.
Maybe not.
Wow, did not expect that.
I think that's the first time Natalie's backed down on anything in her life ever.
Against Bird, for sure. But he made a very good argument and I had no response, so okay.
We should probably wrap the podcast up there, but we do have to do predictions, unfortunately. Kevin?
Predictions. It's the Prediction League.
I'm back!
Oh, yes. That may have been the creepiest link that you've ever done.
You've heard of bad losers, right? There are such a thing as bad winners. Kevin Robinson is a bad winner.
I'm a very good winner. I'm good at predicting. I'm good at predicting results again. After a run,
but hang on a minute. It was your birthday and we were going to win at Liverpool. I don't understand. You've been saying that for weeks.
Well, before I got onto that, I'm very disappointed in our listeners, because I did not get a single card or a present or a gift card. I was expecting, you know, hordes of email, you know, like...
I think our email server broke under the weight of e-cards.
So
we should have a competition, Kevin, because it's actually my birthday in 2 weeks as well. So we'll see how many of our listeners send
mine's
me birthday.
Mine's next month, actually.
So if you want to send me some online gift vouchers... podcast.nonandever.net. You've still got time. I will count it. I will not look badly on you for being late. But obviously, I think the Burnley team got very, very confused. I asked them to. I wanted them to win for me on my birthday. What they obviously thought is they wanted to give me a result in the predictions league.
Right.
So that's obviously what happened, because I've just broken a run of five games without zilch, nothing for five, and I'm back. So sadly none of you guys got anything at all. I got the correct result. I said we'd get beat 2-1. James said we'd win 2-1. Natalie also said we'd win 2-1, and Jamie went in the middle for a 1-1 draw. So that means I've now, for the first time in weeks and months, extended my lead at the top of the table.
That catchphrase is not catching on.
I've now got...
God. Natalie,
it's nearly over, Natalie. It's nearly over.
So painful.
You might sigh, Natalie, because I've got four times as many points as you've got. So
Yeah. I'm really hating this feature so much.
What are the forfeits? I hate my position. Remember what the forfeits?
No, it's all right. We had, while I was away, we had a unanimous decision, and all of our listeners have agreed that the forfeits isn't happening anymore.
I don't
so it's fine.
That.
It's just bragging rights.
So you can, so listeners, remember, you can look at the table. If you want to see just how good I am, you can look at the table in the show notes. And I look so forward to extending it even more next week.
I just, even if it's Bird that wins, I'd rather Birdie wins than Kevin. Like, somebody has to take over from Kevin now. This is getting impossible.
Well, he's only 7 points behind.
More importantly is that I was top of the Fantasy Football League.
You were.
Over the weekend. I'm not now, but I was at one point.
Kevin, how far behind am I in terms of not becoming last? How far is third place?
Jamie's got 7 points and you've got four, so...
Yeah, but all I have to do is, like, make Natalie go first and predict the same as her for the rest of the season.
I'm not doing it.
Also, I've just remembered more exciting predictions league news. I've now colour coded the spreadsheet. So there you go.
This is the most exciting thing that has ever happened to Kevin, right? That he's been able to do a spreadsheet, colour code it, and he's actually winning. He's beside himself.
I'm so happy.
Right, predictions for this week. Kevin as the leader. You can go first. Sunderland v Burnley at the Stadium of Light on Saturday.
1-1.
1-1.
Shut up.
Interesting.
You can't say that, Kevin, because your prediction's come true and we have to win. It's not on.
Not sure
it's not
that
on that.
James?
We're going to get our first away win style. We're going to win
3-0. 3-0? That is really bold. I want to say 2-0. To Burnley. Natalie?
I was going for the same thing. I share Baldy. What is going on?
What?
I share. Sorry, Verde. I got excited.
Did you just call him Baldy?
Yes, by accident. I'm really sorry, Birdie. Nice. I got really excited. I meant to say, I got really excited about Birdie's bold prediction. I ended up calling him Baldy Birdie. I'm so sorry. Okay, a little bit of composure, please. I share Birdie's bold prediction. And I'm also going to predict a 3-0 win to Burnley.
Brilliant. Well, that's guaranteed. It's not going to be 3-0. At least, I think we should probably wrap it up there because I think everyone's completely hysterical. So that's it for this week's podcast. Thank yous as always go to Rick, who provides our artwork, which you can see on the website and on social media, etc. I'm not sure who's editing this week. Thanks Adam if B edits. Thanks Kevin if Kevin edits. You can always email us with questions, comments, feedback, birthday cards, etc. Email address podcast@nonaynever.net. You can also tweet us @nonaynevernet. As I said earlier, no podcast next week because there's no, that's the following week. We will do a podcast next week because it'll be the Sunderland game. Ignore that. Adam, you can edit that bit out. But that's it for this week's podcast. This has been so smooth. What a good ending to the show. Thanks to Natalie, Kevin and James for joining me. I've been Jamie Smith. Goodbye.
By the way, not just cards, also presents.
Also presents. Also presents. The end.
Birdie, I'm so sorry.
Baldy. Lol.
I'm so sorry. I just got my words mixed up. That's what I was trying to say.
It's been totally silent since.
That's like not bald at all. You've got so much hair.
I'm anything but bald, yeah. Ashley's been complaining that I'm growing my hair. And she's like, are you actually really growing your hair? I'm like, yeah. She's like, you're not just lying to me. I'm like, no, I'm actually growing my hair.
Oh,
she's
like,
but why? Yeah, so I'm anything but bald.
So you can do a getting call less over bald to by the day. Cover your baldness.
Oh, God.
I'm less bald by the day.
Indeed. Tweet of the beat. I've just created a new feature. Never ever thought I'd have beatboxing
on the Non and Ever podcast. 150 odd episodes in and we're still hitting new lows.
Excellent. Tweet of the week.